Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Once more, 310 Division Street was front and center in a debate over its services. Coburg Council hosted a town hall on Tuesday night at the Coburg Community Center. It was a chance for residents to express their thoughts. This was followed the next day by a decision from Northumberland County Council to change the mandate of the operation from a low-barrier shelter to a lower-to-moderate operation, closing the 24-hour warming and cooling drop-in center temporarily as it considers other locations. On today's show, Diana Chan McNally will give her professional perspective. She is a Toronto-based frontline community worker and advocate for people who are unhoused or homeless. She is also the coordinator of the Ontario Coalition for the Rights of Homeless People. While she does not live in Northumberland County, she is aware of what has taken place here and elsewhere. She's going to speak to Bill 6, the Safer Municipalities Act, a recently passed piece of legislation aimed at municipalities dealing with encampments and people living rough. I'm so pleased to have with me today Diana Chan McNally, a Toronto-based frontline community worker and advocate for people who are unhoused and homeless. She is also the coordinator of the Ontario Coalition for the Rights of Homeless People. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the details, I would like to get a big picture synopsis of Bill 6, the Safer Municipalities Act.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Bill 6, we're looking at a very, very different approach to homelessness than we've seen in the past, both from the province, but also from municipalities who will be wielding the tools that are enshrined in Bill 6. So what it essentially does is that it suggests that anyone who is encamped or in any kind of public space, if they are perceived to be using drugs, and I really want to emphasize that perceived doesn't mean that they actually necessarily have drugs or are using them, they can be essentially evicted immediately by a police officer. Now, if somebody doesn't comply with that because they may not be using drugs and they have nowhere to go, they can face jail time of up to 6 months, a $10,000 fine, or both of these things. And on top of that, there is an aspect of Bill 6 which makes it what we call an aggravating factor under the law if they are seen as being likely to trespass again. So that means that punishments could be scaled up simply because, and because they will actually trespass again if they have nowhere else to go. So I think we're really targeting homeless people, making them liable for homelessness when we understand, at least from my perspective, that homelessness is caused by a lack of housing, not by individual factors like simply using drugs, again, which most folks actually do not use. So this is what the bill does. And I think, you know, we spend a lot of time fighting it, understanding that it is not actually expediting the resources that people need, again, shelter and housing.
I'd like to dig into that a little bit deeper, because one of the aspects of this bill says that it's illegal to consume illegal substances in a public place. But forgive me, I thought that this was always illegal. Can you explain what this means from your perspective?
It's not entirely illegal or hasn't been actually enshrined in the law in terms of illicit substances. We know with alcohol, we know with cannabis, for example. But again, what this means is that anyone who is even has simple possession, which is any quantity of drugs, can be targeted under the law. And so with this, we know that a lot of people aren't connected to actual healthcare providers. They're in a lot of pain because they're suffering different physical ailments from living outdoors, or just from other aspects of their life, like having gone through immense amounts of trauma, which is ongoing when you're homeless. So the fact that people do often self-medicate, I think is something that they need to do if there are no other options. We aren't actually, again, trying to connect people to the healthcare and housing that they need. Instead, we're saying they're criminals and leaving them outside with this immense amount of physical pain and trauma, which, again, some people will self-medicate as a result of that. So in this case, I think we're targeting people for doing that instead of, again, giving them the support that they need. So this becomes the hook. A lot of people think this is about drugs, but it's actually really not about drugs. It's actually the hook to be able to evict any encampment anywhere that you want if it exists in a public space. So this is why I'm fighting it from mostly the lens of encampment evictions and less about the lens of drug use, even though that's absolutely a part of it as well.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, police don't have to see things being done. The police or a provincial's offensive officer can take action based on what they say in the legislation as reasonable grounds. How do
Yes.
you interpret this?
I know the law has a very specific way of interpreting this. That said, I think we do a lot of profiling of homeless people. We're conflating homelessness and drug use as being the same problem when they're not the same problem. The majority of people who use drugs are housed. And in fact, the majority of people who overdose and die in their own housing. So this is kind of a misplaced conflation of these two ideas together. Oh, shoot, I just forgot what your question was.
Not at all. The notion of reasonable grounds was what we were talking about. I was trying to get a better understanding of your interpretation of reasonable grounds.
Yes. So because we have this misplaced stigma on people who are homeless, I think reasonable grounds becomes a lot more about profiling than it is about the actual laws. So, as we go forward, if this litigation or this legislation is actually put into place and is being enforced, we'll likely see litigation around individual cases that, will act to qualify what reasonable grounds actually is. And again, if people are being profiled, which I think it's the whole intention, actually, of the legislation is to profile and conflate these two different issues together.
Is it the courts that are the best path forward in terms of responding to this legislation? I know advocacy can do a lot, but sometimes politicians can be deaf to that. Are the courts really the best path going forward to challenge this legislation?
I actually never feel that the courts are the best place to challenge stuff like this. This is my own personal opinion. I think, from the side of advocates and advocacy, anytime something comes into place like this kind of legislation, the first thing that we tend to do is go straight to the courts and engage in litigation against this kind of legislation. But I don't think it is always the best way forward. I think the best way forward is to win over hearts and minds. If the public sentiment, changes to our side because they understand the kind of arguments that I'm trying to make against this sort of legislation, I think that's ultimately what makes the difference. Going to the courts again and again, the Ford government has a lot more resources than we do. And there's a number of pieces of legislation which we have litigation against. And I think that's actually part of the strategy, to be honest. I know, some folks are going to question what I'm saying here, but we've seen with legislation around drug use specifically. We had Bill 223, which shut down supervised consumption sites. We have Bill 6, which conflates homelessness and drug use. And we actually have another bill, Bill 10. And Bill 10 makes landlords, commercial and residential landlords, criminally responsible for drug trafficking on their properties. And similar to reasonable grounds, drug trafficking isn't this like ludicrous activity. In the case of Bill 10, it also covers cannabis. So let's say you have two joints on you. That can actually signify an intention to sell. This is a legal substance now. But drug trafficking, as we understand it, can mean just any amount that can be split. So we have these different pieces of legislation, and instead of putting them all together into one omnibus bill, they've been broken up because on our side, we have to go to courts to fight all of them individually. So it's resource intensive, and it doesn't ultimately address the broader issues of, as I said many times, conflating homelessness and drug use, and specifically stigmatizing people who use drugs and taking away the services that we know have been saving lives. So do I think it's the best path forward? No, but I think it is a path forward that we will necessarily take.
You mentioned earlier the trespassing portion of the legislation. Now, it says if convicted, someone can be fined up to $10,000 or 6 months in prison. Can you help us better understand why so much money and why 6 months in prison?
It's interesting because this legislation is actually based on US policies. So Donald Trump, for example, has been evicting encampments. We had the largest encampment eviction in all of North American history happen in early May in Oregon. So hundreds of people were evicted from Deschutes Forest with nowhere to go. And if they refused to go, they would be put into jail for 6 months or fined actually less than we're fining here, $5,000 USD. We're taking that policy directly from the United States and from Donald Trump and importing it into Ontario. So I think that's the only real logic as to why these particular numbers. But I want to stress, when you put somebody in jail for 6 months, that comes at a cost to all of us. We don't actually have enough jail space. So frankly, even if this comes into effect and we're, suggesting that people are going to go into jail, yes, some people will, and I think that's egregious, but at the same time, we won't have enough space for everyone to go. We just simply don't have enough jail, frankly. But that said, anyone who will be put in jail, that is expensive. It costs over $130,000 a year to put one person in jail. Why would you spend that money on this kind of problematic criminalizing tactic, penalty, instead of expediting housing, which again will solve the issue of homelessness, be less expensive in the long run. With the $10,000 fine, this is going to be a problem for municipalities, which I don't think they understand yet. Who processes these fines? It's municipalities. So they have to put forward the resources to actually put this into the courts, have a hearing, try to recoup the funds, which they never will recoup because what homeless person has $10,000? It's simply ludicrous. If I had $10,000, I'd be doing well, but I'm still housed. If you had $10,000 and you're homeless, you wouldn't be homeless. I'll put it that way. So they're going to be spending, again, more tax dollars. That's a property tax increase for municipalities broadly, and an increased backlog in the courts for things like parking tickets, all kinds of different fines that are processed at the municipal level. So this is not helping municipalities, which I think is the way it's being framed. It's actually giving them a lot of work and having to spend a lot of money to get back money that they'll never see again. So it's a black hole, as far as I'm concerned. And I think as a remedy, it does nothing except, again, stigmatize people who are homeless and create more problems for municipalities, not less.
Can we arrest our way out of this problem? I mean, what role should the law enforcement be playing in your mind?
None. This is a social issue. It's a solvable social issue. This is not a criminal issue. The police have a very specific job, and it's to address crime. And now, when we have them doing social work, essentially, again, you're criminalizing people, but it's a social work kind of interaction that would be better suited to social workers who can support them and try to expedite them into housing, give them the resources they need. When we put police in that position, we also take their resources away from solving serious crime. And we've seen in the US, there actually is a direct correlation between having them do this very low level enforcement and a huge reduction in their ability to solve things like homicides. That actually creates less public safety. This is, again, the fact that this is about safer municipalities is a ruse. It's not actually what's going to happen. We want police to be engaged in solving serious crimes, things like carjackings, which are a huge problem. Again, homicides. Not actually ticketing and moving along homeless people with nowhere else to go. It's just a really ridiculous way to, I think, use our money and our resources, which will not solve homelessness. As I've said many times, the only thing that's going to do that is housing. And that's what this government should be focusing on.
How can this legislation be so wrong? If 12 mayors wrote the premier asking for solutions, I know there are many people who have contacted our local MPP complaining about these issues. So there are many people out there saying it's about time, including these municipal leaders. So what do you see that they don't?
Again, I don't think this is going to give people the tools that they think it will. At the very basic level, we had these 12 mayors of, only 12 municipalities. We have 444 municipalities across Ontario. And in fact, the organization that kind of coalesces and guides all of them, which is called AMO, so the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, put forward a statement saying this legislation is not going to help and outline many of the arguments that I've already made about how it doesn't give municipalities real tools. Mayors don't direct the police, and that's a good thing. You don't want your politicians directing your police services and forces because that would be an abuse of power. So this legislation doesn't actually give the power to these mayors like I think they think it's going to. It gives them to police and the courts. And many municipalities have encampment protocols. They're very specific to that municipality. And, in some ways, it may actually exacerbate, something on the fire to make the encampment situation worse, spend more money, move people around, punish them. And in other situations, I'm thinking of places like Toronto, where we have an encampment protocol that is about expediting people into housing. This is going to conflict with that. So you're going to have municipal bylaws, you're going to have municipal encampment protocols that will conflict with this legislation or exacerbate it, which is to say that across the province, you're going to maybe see very, very different approaches where some municipalities will be seen as more zero tolerance because both the political side and the policing side will not be on the side of folks in encampments. And in other cases, you'll see that they're at odds with each other. My prediction out of this is that there is nowhere for people to go. They will be evicted. Some people will go to jail, but the majority of people will just be bounced around to different outdoor locations, which doesn't end encampments. So, I'd say to these mayors, this doesn't actually do the thing that you want to be done. Folks who are on side with this legislation, I get that people are angry. They're tired of seeing encampments. It's upsetting. It's upsetting for me for different reasons, maybe. But I think ultimately we can be on the same side of this. We can end encampments, but we can also understand that this legislation is not going to be the thing that does it. The thing that does it is going to be housing. But I do think we've been quite successful in, again, conflating drug use and criminality and homelessness as being the same problem. So in their minds, people can't dissociate the idea that anyone who's homeless is not just a quote unquote drug addicted criminal. The majority are not any of these things. Of course, you get every kind of person under the sun, but I'm working frontline with people. I've got grandmas out there. They lost their spouse. They can't afford their housing anymore because their spouse has passed on. They're living in an encampment. This is not what people think it is. There's a real diversity of folks who are living outdoors that reflect every kind of person that you can imagine. I've seen lawyers. I've seen a real estate agent, for example. The irony of that is vast. I have people who are working on a daily basis in construction, and they're building homes that they could never afford. So I want people just to rethink who is homeless and understand, again, this isn't about punishing people. It's about ending the problem. So let's come together and tell this government that they need to expedite housing now.
There is a community meeting this week about the local homeless and housing shelter, along with ongoing concerns about people living rough in the town. People are being asked to make presentations to the local municipal council. It is being held at one of our largest venues, and there are expected to be many submissions. What advice would you give local politicians going to this meeting?
Again, to really understand the legislation that has been created and what that, again, does to your municipality and will do to your municipality. I feel like, a lot of people have the ear of politicians who are against encampments. And that becomes an issue from the other side of trying to convince people what the right resources are, because we're seen as being like, we need to have people living in encampments in perpetuity. That is not what we want. Again, we don't want encampments either. We're just coming at it from a different way. I would hope that politicians can be open to understanding our side of the argument, because we have decades of evidence that show that the way to actually address homelessness is to give people housing. So please listen to these folks. Stop believing that, you know, they just want to have this criminal problem festering in our parks forever. That is not what we're asking for. We're asking for a pragmatic approach to address encampments that will actually work. And so for folks, again, who may be deputing or we say deputing in Toronto, I believe it's delegating pretty much everywhere else in Ontario, which I find really interesting why. Well, I could go on forever about why Toronto thinks it's so special and unique. The rest of Ontario does things in a different way. I digress. If you are delegating to council, you know, a lot of the things I've said about Bill 6, it's not going to give the municipalities a tool that they need. It will actually enact harm against people instead of actually addressing the underlying issue of encampments. And we know that things like jail time, that's expensive. We know that these fines are never going to be recouped. We need to focus our energy on creating shelter in for emergency purposes, but also really housing. So I'd love to see all of our councils across Ontario, and we have quite a few of them that understand that the only thing that's going to solve this is housing. You know, it's actually not a unique position. It's just not the position that anyone ever talks about. We talk about the other side, people who are against encampments, but understand that there are other municipalities out there, councillors, mayors, who get that this is a problem as well. And so you're not alone. You're really not alone if you're delegating to your council to talk about these issues. And so, you know, there are ways also you want to connect through, you know, the Ontario Coalition for the Rights of Homeless People. I'm the coordinator there. There are ways to also connect with other folks in other communities who are doing this work if you need that additional support, because I know it can sometimes be a bit lonely in some municipalities. So, you know, do your best and you're not by yourself.
We've talked a lot about housing, but in rural communities like Northumberland County, there's also talk about the need for mental health services and drug treatment. Can you speak to those?
Yeah, drug treatment is seen as this panacea. It's going to solve everyone's issues. And I always like to point to everyone's favorite right-wing pundit, Jordan Peterson. How many times has he been in recovery and how's that worked out for him? It is not a one and done magic solution that is going to change someone's circumstances and, you know, persona forever. Turn them from being the drug addicted criminal that people think into this hardworking member of society. As I said, a lot of folks that I'm working with are working right now. They're building homes for people. They just don't have one themselves. And so when we talk about drug treatment, we have to understand that it is not this panacea. And more importantly, it is unregulated. It's fully unregulated in Ontario. It's mostly for profit. And so we're not asking for the right things when we talk about drug treatment. It should be evidence-based, trauma-informed, and absolutely regulated and public. When the reality is that it's generally none of these things. And there's been exposés. I know that there's one in the Toronto Star about a drug treatment center located close to Orillia. And so in this space, they were taking money, so much money from these people who were hoping to, you know, renegotiate their relationship with drugs, not use drugs anymore. And instead of actually having on-site doctors, medical support, social support, none of these people really had backgrounds in these things at all. They would party in a hot tub. And in fact, one of the people died who was attending this particular drug treatment center. So please understand that this is not a medically regulated facility that we're talking about here. When Ontario, the province, the government talks about drug treatment, they're talking a lot about privatization. And I do think this is a motivating factor for things like Bill 6. This is how we start to push people, not just into treatment, but in unregulated, privatized treatment, which is a big, big money maker. I'm not for that because it's not actually giving people the tools they need when they want them to renegotiate their relationship with drugs to stop using. That's not what happens. It isn't. With mental health treatment, yes, we actually do need more services out there, especially understanding that people who are homeless, this is ongoing 24/7 trauma that you're living all of the time. Most of the mental health services that exist in this province are for people with low level issues, fairly middle class, and in housing. And that is not effective for a lot of people who are again, experiencing this ongoing trauma, but also in many cases have intense trauma from their past. So yes, mental health services, but not forced treatment, not coercive mental health treatment. We have to give people voluntary options, which don't currently exist, which again are evidence-based. As I said, a lot of this is about pushing people into privatized services. And I think we have to understand how insidious that is. We understand that with surgeries. We understand it's insidious when now people have to pay for cataract surgeries who used to be able to get them for free without having a massive, massive wait list. We understand that it's a problem that our ERs are closing down across Ontario. I was recently in Chesley, Ontario, and their ER has been closing down nonstop. And the residents are getting upset because part of this entire structure of how we're rethinking health in Ontario is about pushing down our public services, ripping them apart so that we can start to push forward this privatization. And this whole thing about drug treatment, mental health treatment is a big part of that if we don't thoroughly and analytically investigate what's going on here. So I'm not against services. I just believe they have to be evidence-based and public. And that is not the intention of this government at all.
Affordable housing is a major priority of the Ontario government. They'll tell you that in a heartbeat. You keep calling for housing. So where's the disconnect?
Look at their housing starts. I think anyone who wants to look at how this government has been doing on housing just needs to look at the data. You know, we were promised 1.5 million homes. We're not meeting even half of that. And that was the government's own goal. We didn't set that for them. They said they were going to build 1.5 million homes, and they're not doing that. They're doing things like including long-term care beds among new housing. That is not a home. That is a medically supervised bed in a facility. Institutional facility. So they're finding any way they can to fudge the numbers, but I also think they've kind of given up on affordable housing more broadly. Now, you know, one of the tools that would really help with encampments right now, the government's already doing. They're just not scaling it up to the extent that they should. So we have this program called the Canada Ontario Housing Benefit, and it's a cost share program between the federal government and the provincial government. And what it does is that it expedites people into private market housing through a time-limited rent supplement. Time-limited, I think right now it's 6 years that you can be using this. And I know people will be like, oh, free money, free money. It's still less money than to put somebody in jail. It is still less money than to have police and social services constantly interacting with encampments. The government, if we were being pragmatic, would increase this rent benefit. Because it is the one thing that we have, at least in Toronto, because sadly, we get the majority of these benefits. They're not equitably served to the rest of Ontario. I digress about that. I think there has to be an equity strategy as well. But it is the only thing that is moving people from encampments and from shelters directly into housing and keeping them there. So if you have this program that works, why are you not expanding it? Why are you doing this Bill 6 stuff instead? If the housing isn't affordable, then the rent supplement helps to address that. It makes sense to expand this program. And yet again, I don't think this government is very pragmatic, and I don't think they actually are very focused on ending encampments. They're focused on deflecting on their own record in terms of housing. So they may say they're building it, but look at the numbers. That's certainly not true.
What is the role of warming centers and low barrier shelters in addressing concerns?
This is generally the kind of space I work in. I've always worked in drop-in centers where we're very, very, very low barrier. Typically, most places have much higher barriers where folks with really intense amounts of trauma, medically you might call concurrent disorders like mental health stuff, substance use, conflating together, where they can go and receive services and stay warm and healthy without needing to meet certain behavioral guidelines or metrics. It's interesting because I've worked in these kinds of spaces for a long time, and people are just like, wow, that's really hardcore. They must be really dangerous. They're not. I've never had a problem. And the reason is that if you show people respect, they give it right back to you. So in our spaces, people are always saying, thank you, ma'am, and being very polite in asking for things when I think out on the street, people are generally afraid of them. I don't think this is nuts or anything. I think it's pretty logical. It's like if you show people that kind of respect, they're going to give it back to you. So these spaces to me are imperative because it allows people somewhere to go that is not outdoors in the elements. And where, again, there doesn't have to be specific guidelines, institutional guidelines for you to be in there. And the interesting thing about that is that when you eliminate those guidelines and just, you know, act on a level of respect, you don't need them anyway. They're some of the safest spaces I've actually been in terms of homelessness services because of that mutual and community-based relationship building and respect. So we do need these kinds of spaces, but I want to pick on the warming center piece of it because climate change, forest fires. I know that all across Ontario, people are contending with the smoke that's filtering down from Manitoba, Saskatchewan. I think also a bit of Quebec, even maybe in Ontario itself. At this point, I'm not even sure where they all are. This is a problem. It's also a problem when we have extreme heat. In fact, more people die in extreme heat than they do in extreme cold. I've been advocating for at least a little while around the need for emergency weather centers. So places that can be flexible, that will open up depending on what's going on. We had massive flooding here in Toronto last year, which people's stuff all got soaked. It got, you know, basically ripped away because of the flooding. There's a lot of bacteria in that water. It's mixing with fecal matter and all kinds of garbage. People are getting sick. So we do need to have this kind of low barrier emergency space, but I think we need to broaden the scope outside of just winter.
You've argued as part of our conversation about arresting people and putting them in jail as being more costly. And I think if I'm correct, you mentioned a number around $134,000 per homeless person per year to jail them. When businesses in the local downtown are losing money, people are afraid to walk in certain areas. And when residents in neighborhoods are afraid to go outside, maybe this is a reasonable price to pay in their minds. What would you say to those people?
Again, there is nowhere for people to go. If you think that people are going to disappear because of this, suddenly they're going to be in jail and you're not going to see that person or that encampment again, that's not what's going to happen. As I've said, we don't actually have the jail space. And what will happen instead is that people will get moved around and feasibly closer to where you live, closer to a playground that your children play at, closer to their school. So it's not going to eliminate the issue that you want to be eliminated.
Well, the Canadian Civic Liberties Association argues that the Ontario government is criminalizing vulnerable individuals. It violates their rights. And you've argued that as well today. Yet I've heard various people that in Northumberland, they would say, well, what about our rights? What about looking after us as well in this situation?
So nobody has a right to be uncomfortable or not be uncomfortable, or not have to look at certain things. And I know that sucks to say it because it is uncomfortable. It's making you feel afraid. And so I don't want to, you know, stigmatize people further for thinking these things, because that's not how we build bridges. But the way that the charter works, human rights work, is that folks who are without housing are very clearly being denied one of their basic rights, the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. This is Section 7 under the Charter. And in fact, in Ontario, we have won court cases on this basis, understanding that in Waterloo Region, when they tried to evict an encampment with nowhere for people to go, the court decision said this was a violation of their Section 7 rights. Again, life, liberty, and security of the person, unless we had enough shelter. So these are ultimately the rights that are being violated, and it has repercussions on our broader communities. Again, it makes people feel unsafe. It makes them feel like they can't actually go to their local business because they're afraid of encountering somebody. But the reality is that if we address those Section 7 rights, again, make sure that folks have decent, accessible shelter, healthy shelter in the emergency, and then also permanent housing, this will no longer be an issue for everybody. So our rights are intertwined. If we address the rights of homeless people, we address the broader implications of homelessness altogether.
So you've mentioned this already, but how do communities bridge the immense gap in this highly divisive issue. How do we dial this down so there are productive answers in our community that can be found for all sides?
It's really hard, and I'm not going to suggest that it's easy at all. I think the thing that I try not to do is dismiss people outright. We have enough of that going on in our society. We stop listening to each other about a lot of different issues, and this is creating conflicts on all different levels. That's not productive for anybody. This is not a battle of us against them, and we're all trying to win our individual things. We're trying to address a problem. And I think when I'm speaking with folks who maybe don't agree with me, I concentrate on the problem, not on the person in front of me. And I'll give them, some of the solutions that have worked in the past. I will talk about a lot of the things that I've said here. And again, not in a stigmatizing fashion and not, tell people that they're being, silly for being afraid. This is very new, especially for smaller communities. You've never seen something like this. 10 years ago, this didn't exist. So I want to be sensitive to that. And I think we can also try to be sensitive overall, because we can't, if I've said litigation is a tool, but we have to win in the court of public opinion. It means that we need to start bringing people on side to understanding that what we're talking about with Bill 6 is not going to eliminate the problem. It could actually make it worse. And if we really want to address a problem and not have folks living outdoors from either side, because, you're more worried about the folks who are homeless or because you're worried about your own family, the solution is still the same. So focus on that, I think. I don't want to say that it's a magic kind of thing where suddenly someone's going to change their mind, and you might get berated a little bit here and there, and that goes both ways as well. Just keep on it, because I think the more that we humanize each other, that's always a good thing. And I think we're just so used to dehumanizing one another that it's so hard to talk about so many issues now. And this is why we're doing so poorly at solving so many of them.
For our listeners, what would be the best advice for them going forward if they want to become involved in this issue?
I mean, there are lots of folks all over Ontario who are working locally in their municipalities. And, I know there are folks working in Northumberland, Peterborough, Coburg, working on this issue from an advocate standpoint. So, if you're going to be delegating to your city council, I'm sure that you'll meet some of them there. Or if you're not delegating, you can find folks there, meet up with them, team up with them, and see what you can do together. Some of that includes mutual aid, like supporting people who are outside, understanding that, again, you don't have a ton of services out where you are. A lot of places don't have a ton of services. In some cases, they have no services whatsoever. So it becomes really dependent on folks engaging in mutual aid, support for people living in Camlins, and support for each other as well. Find those people. And I promise you, it is a good feeling to find like-minded people who care. That's my advice.
Diana Chan McNally, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was Diana Chan McNally, coordinator of the Ontario Coalition for the Rights of Homeless People.
I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.